Hi listeners, it's Lucy. Please don't scroll ahead. This is a very quick message, I promise, to ask a very easy favour. At the end of each episode, as the credits roll, you'll hear a request from us to rate and review the show. Now, for those of you that are awesome podcast listeners rather than podcast makers, you might actually have no idea what a huge difference those things make. A significant factor in the visibility of a podcast on almost all listening platforms is down to the number and quality of ratings and subscriptions. So, if you are one of our dedicated listeners, hi, I know some of you are as far away as Australia, so thanks. If you're currently not driving your car or changing a baby's nappy, can you please just look down at your phone right now as I'm talking and hit subscribe and 5-star rating? Both of them are on the homepage of the show and they are both only a one-click job. But oh my God, what a lot of joy and gratitude I would feel at those one clicks. It makes such a difference to the show's potential to keep going. Now, enjoy the episode and thanks for listening.
You're about to hear a brief conversation with an incredible artist. Part autobiographical journey, part literary analysis, and part late-night chat in the theatre bar. This is Hear Me Out.
And I'm your host, Lucy Eaton. Please welcome to the stage, Claire Marie Hall.
I'm the worst multitasker in the world, so I literally would be like, is it working? Like, and I'm trying to speak and just be like, I don't know. Is it?
Yeah, you know, kind of like that.
That's mignon with thought.
And you know what's funny? I am a very bad multitasker in terms of talking and multitasking. I can listen very well and do other things, but I can't talk. So like I'm the type of person where if I have a friend round, I'm cooking them dinner and they want to come into the kitchen and be like, so how are you doing? I'm a bit like, you talk, you give me a TED talk and I'll chop vegetables.
No, I'm the same.
Good. Okay, so launching in to this episode. Claire, thank you so much for coming on the show. I was so excited when, I mean, to be honest, when your PR people came to me and were like, would you consider having Claire on the show? Because at the time I hadn't seen Operation Mincemeat, but I had friends who were, excuse my French, losing their shit over Operation Mincemeat.
It's a good show. It is a good show.
It is more than a good show. And I, one of my best friends, in fact, I think was on her like third trip to see it. You know, aww. I knew the phenomenon that it was, but I hadn't had a chance to experience it. I since have, and it is such a special, brilliant thing. Let's launch in with, this is a very special episode because you are not going to be talking about a speech today. You are going to be talking about a song, and that song is going to be from Operation Mincemeat. So why don't we start, Claire, with you just telling us a little bit about the show for people who may have not seen it, and then tell us what the song is and a brief intro to why you love it so much.
So the show is Operation Mincemeat. It's a new musical comedy, been running since 2019. The actual show is about a 1943 deception plan concocted by the British intelligence to fool the Nazi party into thinking that the Allied forces were going to invade Sardinia instead of Sicily. And so they did this by very madly coming up with a plan to dress a corpse up as a British pilot, plant important documentation in quotation marks on him, detailing the attack on Sardinia, planting him in the Spanish waters in the hope that Spain would then pass him over to Hitler and his advisors, and he would move his troops accordingly out of Sardinia into Sicily. Sicily into Sardinia. So, yeah, absolutely mad scheme, which actually did happen and actually did work and helped us win the war.
Mad.
So, yeah. And I mean, we kind of, or Spitlip have created this musical comedy, which kind of tell the story through a really creative way. There's only five people in the cast. We each play a load of different characters. We each have one main character or maybe two main characters. And then we kind of just quickly change from character to character to character to tell this mad, mad, mad story. And in a very fun way.
I mean, such a good intro. And I would say, first of all, like you say, the origin of the story is mad. And when I first When I saw it recently, I went with my husband and there was a wonderful moment where he had no idea what the show was we were going to see. And in the first 5 minutes, there was a reference to the idea, you know, and he leant over to me to go, oh, that's actually, that was a real thing. It actually happened. They dressed up a corpse. And I had to be like, babe, that's the show. Like, pipe down. I understand. Like, don't worry. But also, I think you've hit on something there, which I loved so much about it. And I think speaks to what I love about my favourite experiences at the theatre anyway, which is your cast of five. And I think so many amazing things are made. One of my favourite phrases when it comes to theatre is, I'm going to get it wrong now, necessity is the mother of invention. Is that it? Necessity is the mother of invention. But I think it's that idea of, I imagine, and you can speak to this more maybe in a moment, but I imagine that Spitlip developed this for five people initially because maybe that was the number of people in their troupe. That was a number that you could manage paying people maybe a little bit of profits from doing a fringe show. That would, you know, it's all these things that mean it, originally you go, this has to be a small cast. And actually what that leads to is the most inventive, beautiful, like fun, joyous, impressive theatre, you know, true essence of theatre show that you can have. And I think it's a great shame sometimes when we go and see these big budget things in the West End where money's been thrown at it and it's a cast of like 25 people and actually you slightly lose the essence of what's really magical about theatre. So yeah. I guess like what is the experience like for you of being in this five-hander where you're playing a million parts and you don't get a chance to breathe?
Well, yeah, it's funny you should say that because I think from what I know, that is the reason why it is a five-hander is because, and that's the reason why. So the fun thing about the show as well is this current stage, the writers are in it and have been since it was first made, or three of the writers anyway. There's four writers in whole. Spitlip is made up of four people, three of which are in the cast. And the reason they were put in the cast is because of budget. Like, it was the cheapest way for the show to run. And they just needed another two people in order to complete basically the amount of characters that they needed to portray. And that's the reason why it is five people. But yeah, and because of that, it has created this fantastic show, which, I mean, not only is the script well written and kind of like the music is fantastic, but yeah, it is so different because of the fact that it is about quick changes and it's all very slick. And you like, people have said like that they think that there's more people on stage than there actually is at points.
But this is why theatre is so great. Like, I love it. It's so exciting. And the troupe, you are so talented, but so nimble. But I think it does just make for something really, really thrilling. So, okay, so tell us about your favourite song.
So the song is called Useful. Mm-hmm. It's a lovely song between one of the main characters I play called Jean Leslie, who is a young MI5 secretary who basically wants to change the world. She's a feminist. She's taking advantage of this chance that she can finally climb the career ladder that was, you know, until now dominated by men. And then on the other hand, you've got Jack's character, who plays Hester Legat, who is head of the MI5 secretarial pool. And she's completely different in her way of thinking. She follows the rules. She very much kind of plays the game and believes in the long game rather than kind of like everything happening in an instant. And this duet is about kind of like how over the course of this operation, they have discovered that they've learned lessons from each other. And it is a really like, it's basically the kind of marriage of their friendship.
What made you first really fall in love with it? Did you sort of see the show, I imagine, before you joined the troupe? Or did you join so early that the show was still being made? Like, at what point did you come into contact with this song?
I mean, it's the latter, as in, like, I've been really privileged on this whole crazy course of this show being developed, because the show has been developed over a very long period of time, which is, again, can I have something to say, like, something that hardly ever happens in musicals. Usually musicals are given a whole load of money. They're done like a couple of private workshops and they're shoved on a big stage and a big spectacle. While this has been literally kind of polished over, I mean, 4.5 years now, where we've done sort of like, this is our fifth run, I think. And slowly audience capacity has grown bigger. But I joined in the second iteration of this musical. And Useful didn't actually come around until the third iteration. What Useful now kind of does was done in a kind of reprise of another song that happens earlier on called All the Ladies, which is sort of like Jean's main song. And it was completely different. I couldn't even tell you how it went. It didn't land as well. And useful came almost as a kind of result of lockdown. So Tash, who plays Montague in the show, she was, I think she was the main one behind it. She wrote the lyrics. She's so good, isn't she? She wrote the lyrics for it. And the whole thing came out of just her wanting to feel useful at that time. I remember getting a voice note from Spitlet being like, I think we've done it. I think we've nailed the song.
I think that's really interesting as well, what you were talking about, the changes that the show has gone through, because it reminded me a little bit of the play That Goes Wrong, not in format necessarily or structure, but in terms of its story and its and the show's life.
Yeah.
Because the play That Goes Wrong gang were at drama school at the same time as me. So I can remember them. We were in different years, but I can remember the early devising of this clown show. And I thought that was amazing when I then saw it on the West End, because I was thinking, well, there are things you are doing here on the West End that you couldn't possibly have done at Trafalgar downstairs, or you couldn't possibly have done wherever you were before that. And the same for Operation Mincemeat. When I saw it and it's like a beautiful 2.5 hour long musical, I was like, well, what wasn't in there at the beginning? Because it all feels so necessary.
The set. The money.
Well, so I heard a little rumour. Can you confirm this? I heard a little rumour that essentially, back to my necessity is the mother of invention, the show that, the brilliant show that it is, was made on very little budget. But then you were obviously given somewhat more of a West End budget. And where does that West End budget go?
Most of it might have gone towards the end of the show. It's a bit of like a kind of like a joke, like the last joke of the whole kind of show is the fact that a lot of the budget might have got spent on the last 10 minutes of the show.
Hilarious.
It is like this last joke.
So to what extent do you still get very moved singing this song now? Because, of course, it's so easy to go on autopilot when you've been doing a show for a long time. Do you have certain shows or certain moments where you're like, God, that really hit again?
I will say, like, this is the song that always hits. And it's the song that I'd like to hopefully think that I don't think I've ever performed exactly the same every time I've done it in God knows how long I've been singing it.
Yeah.
Just because there's so much to it that I can relate to in different points of my life.
Mm-hmm.
The premise is that not all heroes get medals and that everyone is useful. And being useful is sometimes merit within itself.
Mm.
And everyone behind a plan or behind a venture is just as important as the person, the figurehead at the front. And I think we've all gone through moments in our lives where we aren't like that person taking the bow, or we aren't the person getting the acclaim, but we've contributed the same, if not more.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah,
and that
especially
is very,
as an actor.
I was about to say, I mean, I'm sure there are lots of people in different careers being like, yeah, I hear you. But yeah, 100% as an actor, you know, we, and even as creatives within our industry, I think we're all horribly aware of how little plaudits are given to the casting director or the stage manager or the, you know, like all those other people that ultimately made the thing be as brilliant as it was.
Also swings.
Swings. Oh, so talk more about, because of course, yes, that's a musical theatre thing that I don't know much about. So talk about swings. Yeah.
Well, swings, it kind of like, so they understudy the understudies, as in terms of like, and sometimes they understudy the leads as well. So they're waiting off stage, ready to go on at a pin drop. I've never done a swing, but I kind of like, I don't think I could. Like, I don't know if my brain would retain that amount of information. It's a massive kind of like undertaking, especially like a musical theatre, because a lot of them, like a lot of tracks are dancing tracks as well that swings kind of cover. So the fact is, like, you're not only knowing one kind of like where you're supposed to go or one routine, you know all these things. And then, as I said, like they understudy as well. So on top of that, like they might be a cover for a lead as well. So they know all the dialogue. They know all of that. I don't even. Yeah.
I don't know how their
hats
brains
off.
Do it. Yeah.
Also like ASM tracks as well, because you get people who do ASM stroke kind of like understudying like on tours, on smaller tours as well.
So yes, explain that to the listener. So ASM meaning assistant stage manager.
Assistant stage manager. So they kind of like, they help out with the stage management kind of role side of it as well. So again, they've got that to learn and that to undertake. And yet they're the person that might go on and understudy one of the roles as well. So they've, again, so much information to retain.
Yeah.
And so much pressure.
What are your favourite musicals?
Oh, do you know what? Like, isn't it funny? I was in musical theatre for a long time, from when I was like 21 up to, I'd probably say, the age of like 28. And then I fell out of love with it. And actually I left and I became a publicist for a little bit.
How interesting. So, talk about that more quickly. So what? How come? All the obvious reasons?
Yeah, the obvious reasons, I think, as in like the reasons that we really don't speak about, as in, do you know what I mean? Like kind of like you don't get the creativity because of the fact that if you go into a musical that's been running for a long time, you're just kind of expected to do what the people before you have done. So you're very limited in terms of your creativity. Also, there's just the fact that the auditioning, the kind of like the unemployment side of it, it doesn't get any easier, especially as you get older. You kind of like realize the stakes when you walk into an audition room with who's in front of you, and then it gets harder because the pressure amounts. And I think I kind of just lost the love of it over a while. Like it wasn't worth the money that I was getting paid for the sort of trouble that I was putting myself through anxiety wise.
Yes.
So then I left, did something completely else for a bit, and have come back and have kind of like my journey has been very much like I want to do new stuff. I want to still remain creative, or at least like I'd love to do like a big commercial thing and then do two or three tiny things that nobody's ever heard of.
Yeah.
But because of that, I lost all my old musical theatre loves, I think. So I think all the musicals that I did used to love when I was younger, I think now I'm kind of like,
they're slightly jaded.
Yeah, not slightly jaded, but I think that was a completely old me. So I don't really like, now I'm sort of like, there is like a musical I love that it's sort of like nobody would ever have heard of, but I'm listening to the album over and over again, called In the Green by Grace McLean, which was this like really random new musical over in America that only did like a very short run, I think, of like 2 months, but I'm absolutely obsessed with it. So, I mean, that's what I mean. Like, I think the stuff that I love at the moment, nobody would have ever have heard of.
That's amazing though. That's so good. And I think that's a really interesting point you just said there about the creativity that I hadn't thought about, that actually within musical theatre, so much stuff is repeated. Like theatre, for some reason, doesn't stand that test of time. Like for a show to run for 6 months to a year is insane. Like if it's a normal play, I mean, you think about things like The Play That Goes Wrong, The Mousetrap, right? Which I can't remember how many years we're up to now, but it's very rare for there to be normal plays that run that length of time. Whereas musicals are so, you know, like, Les Mis is just always going to be there, and Phantom of the Opera is always going to be there, and the Book of Mormon's always going to be there. So I guess so much.
I think acting limitations as well. Like, I wonder if, for example, like, I wonder in The Mousetrap if the same is in terms of like, you have to play it for the person before you, if there is more stretch in kind of like,
that's
the character
interesting.
You play.
Yes, I don't know.
I wonder if they probably, I reckon there's a bit more room. In terms of, I guess, musicals as well, you kind of, timing-wise, you're stuck with a certain way that you have to deliver lines. For example, if you're delivering them over a song, they have to be delivered in a certain rhythm.
Yes.
So structure-wise, there are limitations to the character and the way you can play it. Yeah. Well, at least with a play, I wonder if, I bet there's more room.
We should return to the song.
Yes.
Are there any, because also I'm aware that at the end of the episode, listeners are going to be able to hear the official cast recording of you doing the song, which is really cool. So before they hear it, or so that they can look forward to it, are there any particular lines in it, or any particular melodies or moments or harmonies, because you said that it's a duet, isn't it, that you particularly love?
This is such a random thing to say, but like at the beginning of the song, she kind of says, I imagine the medals they give me when this was all through. And it kind of like just details her dreams, which are ridiculous, because she kind of like envisions herself being medaled by Winston Churchill for this mission that, you know, like nobody's ever really going to know that she was a part of. But in my head, I kind of like envisage like us, it sounds so dumb, but us making the show, and kind of like the dreams of us all at the beginning and being like, this show is going to be really big and we're going to win loads of medals for it and it's going to be great.
And then you have.
Yeah, no, but as in like, yeah, I mean, God, like the dreams came true, but as in kind of like just little us like back years ago is sort of like, especially like Spitlip, just the kind of like being like, we're just going to write this show for the fun of it and see what happens. And, you know, we'd love all these things to happen, but really deep down, we don't really think they will. Also at the end, when there's another line where basically the song culminates in this sort of like lovely harmonizer duet between Jean and Hester. Yeah. And she goes, I think that when people meet in the middle of a war, it seems like it means something more. And again, like I sing to Jack on that bit, who plays Hester, and Jack and I have been kind of like the two actors on the sort of like sidelines of this show. It's obviously like you've got Spitlip, the three kind of who wrote it, and we're all really good friends and we get on so well. But Jack and I have like been the ones where we start, can just like sit down and while they go and write the show, and we're just being like, we'll go and eat crisps by the side.
Yeah. And Jack, I mean? So like, is
oh, he's phenomenal. Phenomenal. But yeah, that line is kind of like, I specifically think about me and Jack, and I'm kind of like, that's our friendship.
Final question. I'm aware that I've possibly done this in this interview, but do you feel boxed as a musical theatre performer, do you struggle now to be seen as anything other than a musical theatre performer, or do you feel that there is some liberty to pursue other avenues?
Do you know, when I was younger, and it was again a reason why again I fell out of it, I think maybe times have slightly changed. When I was younger, I felt very, very boxed in. And I kind of felt that this is all I'm being seen for and all I'm expected to do with musicals, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I love musicals. Since I've come back, maybe because I'm older, so I'm getting seen for a different kind of age, like age range.
Suddenly we get seen for like mum. And I'm like, am I mum now? Okay, I see.
It's happened. There are my screen kids. But yeah, I think now I'm older, like, or maybe just changed agents or whatever. I've actually ended up, I've been seen for like probably as many plays as I have been musicals.
Great.
I think the only thing that stifles me now is my own kind of like self-esteem being like, oh, well, I trained in musical theatre. I can't do that. But yeah, not so much now, but definitely when I first graduated, yes.
You must find that like a traditional theatre audition in comparison to a musical theatre one,
it's
feels
so
like a
nicer
walk in the park. Oh my God.
Because
I was about to say, I've had the flip reverse, right? I'm not a musical theatre actress. When I was a kid, that's what I wanted to be. I was like, I want to be in musicals. but I'm just not good enough at any of the skills. But I have been seen for musicals just a couple of times in my career. And one was... Once. Do you remember the musical
Once? Oh, God, what a beautiful musical.
So somehow I got seen, and I think that's because they wanted people who could sing and play instruments.
I thought you said, did you play the piano?
Yes, so I played the piano and the violin, and I'm not
great
at the violin. I don't love it. And the first time I was seen for it, I was seen for, I think, one of the supporting leads, and it was hands down the worst audition of my life. I walked out and I sobbed because I remember I'd cycled there maybe with my violin on my back, and I don't love playing the violin anyway. And I've almost had to say to my agent since, so many auditions used to come in where it was like, and it's great if the person can play the violin. I'm like, I think we need to behave like actually I can't because I don't like it. But anyway, I cycled there and my hands were freezing. And I remember going into the audition and I had to sing, act a scene and play the violin. And it was these two people in there, and one was the MD, was the musical director, and he was a very stern, I can't remember his name, but he was not a very nice chappy. He was very, very stern. It was clearly the last audition before lunchtime. He just wanted to have his lunch. And he was very sort of, okay, come on, let's start with the violin. And I learned a big lesson in that audition about taking control of your own time. And again, if I'd been older and wiser, I might have had the bravery to be like, actually, I'd like to not start with the violin. I've just cycled here and my hands are freezing and I'll be bad.
Yeah.
You know, so if you'd like to see bad violin, we can start with the violin. But if you'd like to see good violin, then no. but I didn't. So I tried to play it and I just couldn't play the song. I mean, he wanted me to play it twice the speed that I'd learned it at anyway. But it was so bad. And I remember bumbling through it. At the end, he just went, okay, I'll give you another go. And I did it again just as badly. And I just remember walking out and, bursting into tears. Hilariously, I was then called in to audition for the lead on the piano when it went to Broadway. And I was like, why is this musical that I'm clearly so bad for haunting me like a nightmare? Like, it's both a dream job and a nightmare job at the same time.
Oh, no, mate, I've had those auditions as well, as in, like, not necessarily once, but I've had those ones where I'm like, I'd love to do this, it's a dream, but I'm never going to get it.
I'm not your girl.
It's probably going to go really bad.
Yeah, I'm not your girl. But I definitely learned also, I think, in that audition, the amount they want to see in a musical theatre audition. Like, again, the skills. You must have, when you started doing normal theatre auditions, just been like, this is a walk in the park. Don't you want to see more?
Yeah, the difference is as well, I don't know if you like, but again, with musical theatre theorists, because they have to see so much in a limited amount of time, you don't get the kind of like the one-on-one, so tell me
chit-chat
about the script. What do you think about this character?
How are you doing? What have you been up to recently?
Yeah, like, as in like, yeah, or just kind of like, what's your opinion on how this character should be played? Actually kind of like, again, it's the creativity of it, because they're limited for time. Like, I mean, bless them, because they've got to get through a song and then they've got to get through another song and like three scenes or whatever. But it is the difference on kind of like, number one, you feel more settled. Number two, you feel more valued as a person when somebody sits you down and literally is like, tell me about yourself and what you could contribute to this play as a person as well as an actor. Like, it just is a different situation. I love straight play auditions. I love them. I absolutely love, and I think I thrive in them because of it. Yeah, I'm like, give me more.
Yeah.
But yes, seriously, like it is, it does feel a lot. Not, that's not to say like all musical theatre auditions are horrendous, because they're definitely not. And there's some lovely, lovely people behind those panels. It's just a different setup.
And like you say, yeah, the tight for time.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing. Claire, this has been so fabulous. Thank you,
thank you for
telling me all about Operation Mincemeat. and we are now going to play your favourite song,
yeah,
Useful, from Operation Mincemeat.
I imagined the medals they'd give me when this was all through.
You imagined the...
No, medals, I know.
Right.
And then Winston goes...
Winston Churchill.
We'd be lost without you.
Right, and where is this?
The palace.
Oh, of course.
And I'd bow and salute. The king knows we're the reason we've won.
Oh, the king's there, is he?
And there's so many medals. And the crowds, they'd assemble and demand to hear just what we've done.
And Mr. Churchill says?
He says, yes, it's all true. Though you'd never believe it, they did what they could do. And though you'd never see it, they worked and they prayed. And it wasn't in vain. They knew pain could be strength. That strength could be pain. They forced enemy forces to fly. They banished the planes from the sky. And they did something useful.
Well, I look forward to the wireless event.
What about you?
What about me?
What's the dream scenario?
Miss Leslie.
How about a statue?
Oh, for goodness sake.
Here lies Hester Leggett.
Oh, good, I'm dead.
Oh, Jesus, what is wrong with me?
Perhaps just a small plaque.
Go on.
Something tasteful and small.
Of course.
Nothing over the top. People don't stand and stop.
Cause just one look and their tears start to fall.
Oh, Lord.
I can see it with flowers, pride of place in a garden.
A garden.
Or a grand royal park.
Ah, thank you.
And it's silver.
Gold.
Gold and it shines.
Or dazzles.
Boldly and they'll see you did more than your part.
For Hester who served her nation.
Yes. A timeless and they'll say it's all true. Though you'd never believe it, she did what she could do. And though you'd never see it, she worked and she prayed. And it wasn't in vain. She knew pain could be strength, and that strength could be pain. She forced enemy forces to fly. She banished the planes from the sky. And she did something useful.
Yes, we've done good work.
And you can't ask the people who can do all of that to just go home and pace through the rooms of a flat, feeling she's travelled right back to the start, stuck at home with her mother, feeling useless and smothering the light that kept out the dark. I hate that he just sees me as some silly little woman.
That might be exactly what we need.
What?
The mission might be in danger. There's something strange going on between Montague and his brother.
What? Surely he wouldn't...
But until he drops his guard and starts talking, we can't know.
But he won't talk to me. He hates me. I'm the last person he'd talk to.
You can do this, Jean. And we need you to. Even if dear Winston never finds out about it.
So you're saying no medals?
No medals.
No statues, no plaques... No flowers for Hester and Jean.
I don't think that it's people like you or me that the crowds come to see. And if there's one thing I know, it's that I'm no good with things that need help to grow.
I'm afraid I disagree. You've done a pretty good job with me.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think that when people meet in the middle of a war, it feels like it means something more.
So who needs a medal? It's this that we'll keep fighting for.
That we'll keep fighting for.
And yes, it was true.
They'll say it's all
true.
They'll
never believe it.
They'll never believe it.
We did what we do. And they'll never see it.
And they'll never see it.
We worked and we prayed.
And we'll keep on going.
Useful. What matters is that we
Miss Leslie?
Yes, Mum.
Hear Me Out is a Lucy Eaton Productions podcast. Music composed by Tristan Kay and artwork by Rebecca Bright. Our heartfelt thanks to the estates and license holders that allow us to read our guests' speech choices. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please, please subscribe, rate, and review. You can follow us on social media at Pod Hear Me Out and enjoy visual clips of the interviews on our YouTube channel. Finally, if you would like to support Hear Me Out, go ahead and click the Patreon link at the bottom of the episode bios.